This is part 2 of episode 5, recorded on June 20th. Thank you for checking back with us. Shane is out this week. We'll be back next week for more frenetic fun from the two guys at Retro Hangover Podcast.
So I think you're going to have some detractors from that statement, because if we move on to the Sony conference, there are quite a number of people that believe that, based on what came out of Sony's presentation, that they won E3 as much as anybody can win E3.
The most emotional press conference. That's right. That's how someone put it to me. It was the most emotional. But we'll continue. I don't think it was the best. Not saying it was bad. You know, it's games are games, but continue.
So starting off with one of the big revelations that I believe had grown men shedding tears of joy was the long-awaited remake of FF7. So Final Fantasy VII, which is one of the most beloved entries in the series, is finally getting a proper remake, and not just a remake, actually. It seems to be more of a reimagining, which I feel like people probably fall into two camps on that one.
Warning.
But the project director, Tetsuya Nomura, indicated that the story will likely deviate from the original. So if you were looking for just a straight up like HD version of FF7, that is not what you're getting. So it's going to be a different story, and who knows what
might
else.
Be a different story.
It was strongly...
Might have some story plot points that deviate from the original.
Yeah, I mean, it was strongly suggested that it will not be identical.
Which may be all right, because when they remade Lunar, the Silver Star story, and Lunar Eternal Blue, they were both originally Sega CD games, and they got remade for the PlayStation. They changed some critical plot points. When they remade Resident Evil for the GameCube... Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say they made some critical plot changes, but they retold the story a different way, just because the translation was kind of botched and the voice acting was terrible and so on and so forth. And they made a lot of changes, and it was a really, really, really nice remake. Resident Evil's probably still the best one.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think we mentioned it last week that you brought your original copy of FF7 over so I could actually play it. I have never played it. Now I suppose I don't really have much of an excuse, because now I have the disc sitting in the other room and I should probably start doing that.
Pop it in.
But coming from someone that hasn't played it, but, you know, just by being in this realm of video games long enough, I've been exposed to enough to have at least a passing knowledge of the game. But, this doesn't bother me. Like, if they want to refine the original story and, like, tweak some things in the game and make it better overall, I see no issue with that. I know there are some purists that are probably hating that right now.
Me.
Like Chris. But it doesn't bother me. It might. I mean, after, if I get a chance to play through this, and I might take an entirely different stance on that, but I don't know. But other long-awaited, fucking really long-awaited things. So Team Ico showed up finally this year.
Whoa! I haven't even talked about the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Nope, you're done. You don't get any.
I don't get to talk about this. As someone who's played it and big Final Fantasy fan, you're cutting me off.
I'm cutting you off.
You fucking bastard! I'm taking over. Sure. Yeah, we'll get to the Last Guardian. We'll get to Last Guardian. As a Final Fantasy fan, this is like...
Mutiny in the podcasting room.
This is like me just talking about Fallout and being, hey, Fallout 4 is out, it looks cool, I know about Fallout, and it's coming out. Awesome. Yep. But, okay. Final Fantasy VII Remake. Mixed reactions. Mixed feelings.
This is going to be like 15 minutes of Chris crying about this.
Oh, I'm going to... No, not crying. I don't know how to feel about this. First of all, Final Fantasy VII, for those of you not in the know... Because, let's face it, this game's almost 20 years old now. Mm-hmm. It's going to be 20 in 2 years. If you're under the age of 23, there's a good chance you'd even play this game. I think like there's a lot of reactions saying, you know, oh, Sony, this is a big reaction by Sony. This is a very, very major game. Okay. Yeah, I get it. Final Fantasy VII, when it came out in 1997, when I first got it, it was one of those games that even then, I think a lot of those people that played role-playing games loved or hated. Because for the longest time, like, I was playing role-playing games prior to it. Then you had Final Fantasy IV, Final Fantasy II at the time, Final Fantasy III, but before they were numbered. You had a very limited amount of RPGs, like Chrono Trigger. Most of them, of course, were Square Enix. You had Lufia. Stuff like that. And it was kind of a badge of pride if you played those games. Because, like, no one played those games. And they were good, and we recognized those qualities.
Also, huge time investments.
Big time investments. But then Final Fantasy VII came out, and it welcomed aboard all these other people. And I can't really complain, because with Final Fantasy VII, and everyone who enjoyed Final Fantasy VII, we started getting a whole lot more JRPGs coming over the shores. Who knows if we would have gotten Suikoden 2 over here, or a Lunar remake over here, or a lot of the games that came out during that era. But with that came everyone who played Final Fantasy VII and started declaring this game the greatest game of all time, and the greatest RPG of all time, and the greatest blah 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 of all time. And then you brought up games, hey, have you tried playing Final Fantasy VI, Final Fantasy IV, all the other previous RPGs, and you get this, like, disgusted look, because the graphics weren't as good as Final Fantasy VII's. And it wasn't as cool because it didn't have movies like Final Fantasy VII. So there's a big love-hate relationship, I think, with that game. Not saying it wasn't defining, because it did change role-playing games in the industry for a very long time. So the fact that it's getting remade is very impactful, especially coming from me, because I was one of those people that was very much in RPGs and liked Final Fantasy VII up until I saw a lot of people just kind of liking it because it was pretty. And that irritated me. Now, not everyone's that way. I get it. Probably more fans aren't. My reservations, all the people have been begging for a remake. And I've not wanted a remake. Because I do think it's a good game. I do like it. It's not my favorite. As I said last week, it's not my favorite. But it is a good game. The reservations are, be careful what you wish for. It's been 20 years. How many people who've wanted this game have actually gone back and played this game? And know what it was like to play it. And know its flaws. Know its shortcomings. How many people want it, if they change anything, are going to be happy with it? Is it going to be a game that has a 2017 shell? Because I think it's going to be released in 2017 to celebrate 20th anniversary. Is it going to be a game that looks like a 2017 game and very pretty? Around a 1997 gameplay mechanic? And does anyone really want that? Probably not. So are they going to make a 2017 game with drastically changed mechanics? That's going to piss off the purists. They're going to go up in arms and be like, this isn't a turn-based RPG the way I remember it. This plays like blah. Well, then they're going to be upset. So I'm anxious to see what they're going to do with the battle mechanics. And the biggest thing that worries me, and the younger people aren't going to care because they're used to it, but people like me, I'm going to care, is when they start, and people say they're not going to do this, but I swear to God, I have this really deep, gut-wrenching feeling that they will, is if they announce DLC and microtransactions to go along with this game to milk the shit out of it. So, pre-order Final Fantasy VII and get the Aerith Revival Pack for $7.99. Or you can get it for free if you pre-order. Hey, you having problems finding all your limit breaks? You can unlock them all for the low, low price of $5 per character.
Ooh, yeah, that'll be just like the Mortal Kombat Crypt thing. You should be like, unlock everything for $20, because who wants to actually play the game?
You want to fight the Ultima Weapon, the character you didn't get to fight in the original Final Fantasy VII? Well, you can in the remake for a $12.99 pack. Don't worry, includes characters all brand new to the series with additional weapons, perks, and buffs. Oh, and all new materia that will come with the DLC pack.
So, I mean, obviously this is an incredibly cynical viewpoint of it.
That's the cynical viewpoint.
But not completely unwarranted. I
hope that's not true. I hope I am wrong, but I have yet to see something in today's video game industry to make me think that
otherwise. That won't happen.
I will say this. It has absolutely nothing to do with Squeenix, but the HD remake of Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale, those that were done did not include any of that bullshit. Like, it was just a straight up, like, HDification, and they also fixed some shit that was broken in the originals and sort of made it play a little bit better.
Different crowd.
But, sure. I'm just saying, like, it's happened. Like, there are old-ass games that have been HDified and released and not been, you know, milked in the scummiest way possible.
But Final Fantasy VII's been milked. They have milked it. Wow. Advent Children, Crisis Core, Dirge of Cerberus.
So, I mean, okay, so are you saying that you think that they've, like, already milked it enough with those that now their only next logical conclusion is to just, like, microtransaction it?
This is a series that Square Enix has not been afraid, and Squaresoft, going back to when they were Squaresoft still, has not been afraid to milk the crap out of. They have not been afraid to exploit this game to its fullest extent. There is no reason in my mind why they would not continue to do that. I cannot, they're, like, I can see them right now doing the Zack Fair, who is a character who's not in the game, but he's a critical plot point. I know you haven't played the game, I don't want to spoil it for you. But, like, the Zack Fair prequel pack, where you get to play missions as Zack Fair and, like Laguna in Final Fantasy VIII prior to the events of Final Fantasy VII. And
okay, but
you can play, like, in this pack prior to it, and now this is going to be $20.
Like, but something like that, is that a problem? Like, if they added, like, new stuff that actually went along with the story? Like, I mean, would that really be an issue? Like, I can see, like, the shitty transaction stuff, like you were saying, like, get the fucking pack thing for this, or stuff that will, like, fundamentally fuck with, like, the game or whatever. I get that, but if they were going to actually make additional content, like,
okay,
for DLC...
So that might be a bad example, but you know that, like, the character who dies in the game, Aerith,
it's
20 years, so it's not even a spoiler anymore. So, if that's a spoiler for you, I'm sorry, but it's been long enough. Get over it. Like, if they release DLC that she could come back to life, or they changed the plot that in the end game you could revive her.
I mean,
that is bad.
Well, yes, but that's also, like, you're going off into, like, Captain Insano territory as far as what they could do to
I don't think that's as insane as you think. If they could put that on, if they could offer that up for $7 that you get to keep her in your party as long as you get to pay for it, you don't think that they wouldn't?
Well, I know of at least one person that would, like, totally be all about that, but
no, they would like it. Of course, there's people out there that would like that, and they want that.
Yeah, not necessarily the, like, paying for it, but just keeping Aerith alive.
You make that look like it's you, like it's a long lost girlfriend or something.
No, it's not me. It's not me. Just people I know that have played that game that have, like, purposefully, like,
or, like, I can see them, like, saying have alternate costumes for Tifa so you could better show off her tits. This is Square Enix. Remember how they had, like...
Okay, that's shitty, but it's also, like, entirely optional and doesn't really, like, fuck with the game itself.
They did the lightning in 13.3, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, like, this is, like, a super cynical outlook on it, and I wouldn't be surprised, really, if they added some, like, DLC stuff to it or something like that. I don't know about the microtransactions. That might even be a little bit too far, even for them.
It's happening in Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, God. Yeah, you're right.
What's sacred anymore? What is sacred?
Fucking nothing, man. Nothing is sacred. All a bunch of jackasses.
You're talking about a company that looks at all the bravest and has no shame with it.
You're looking at the company that has sucked us into playing Record Keeper and...
Which is actually a quality game.
It's quality, but, you know, it's also got that microtransaction shit in it, which, at the very least, that is structured, like, in a somewhat, like, respectable way. Like, it's not super crappy.
Those are my concerns. But now we may move.
All right, well, now that we're done bitching about that, we will now move on to the next topic, which was another long-awaited and long-lost, or seemingly long-lost game. So as I said, Team Ico showed up this year to E3 with Last Guardian, which is something that people have been looking for fucking ever now. And it is... it was there, and they had it, but there's still really not much in the way of actual details or, like, a release time frame or anything like that. But, I mean, at least we know it still exists in some form or another. So, there's that.
This is a game I really wanted and really tracked and cared about when it was announced back in 2009
mm-hmm.
for the PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
Because Shadow of the Colossus, have you played... Ico or Shadow of the Colossus?
So I haven't actually played it, but I watched a Let's Play of, like, the entirety of Shadow of the Colossus. Well, so I pretty much have played it, more or less. It's something I would actually like to go back and play for myself at some point. But
it is a fantastic game. That is one of the few games I pre-ordered way back and got. And I actually took it up north with me. I was on leave.
Mm-hmm.
And took it on vacation with me and played the crap out of it. I love Shadow of the Colossus. So I was very excited when they say Last Guardian. Now, you're talking... people need to keep their excitement tempered. Keep it tempered. I'm not saying this is going to be bad. It looks beautiful. I love Shadow of the Colossus. They maintain the same quality. It's still going to be good. But this is a game that has been in development since 2009. I hope they've updated the mechanics. I hope they've updated the way it kind of flows and plays, but it was a PlayStation 3 game. And graphically, it wasn't too impressive, which doesn't matter too terribly.
Mm.
But, you know, it's a game that it's aged. You know, you just got to be careful. You know, it hasn't aged wrongly.
We're starting to get dangerously close to Duke Nukem Forever territory with this one.
Yes. So the game industry was a lot different back in 2009 in terms of mechanics and how you do these kind of games. Now, some games are timeless, so I'm really hoping it's good. It looks good from what I've seen and like how you coordinate your teamwork with the giant dog cockatrice griffin looking thing. Whatever it may be, just been too long. It's been too long. I'm not even sure if it's going to be that great of a game. I'm happy it's there, but I'm not sure I'm as excited now as I was back in 2009, 2010.
Well, there's that, and then with something taking this long, the expectations build up so much that it will probably never match what people expect out of it, which was part of the problem with Duke Nukem Forever, is like people had such high hopes for it and built this thing up in their head that never realistically could have happened. And that's the risk you run when you have an overly long development cycle. So
end up playing like a game from the era from when they started it, like a late 90s FPS.
Yeah. It was just like something that was felt way too dated. And so that is a possibility with this one. But again, we still, unfortunately, don't really know a whole lot about it. So it's hard to say.
Now, another game that we thought was lost to history, the series. Shenmue 3 was announced at E3 for the Sony PlayStation and the PC. Shenmue was the reported killer app for the Dreamcast. If you don't have a Dreamcast, if you didn't have a Dreamcast back then, you know, you don't know how big of a game Shenmue was supposed to be for the Dreamcast. Had a huge, huge budget, a lot of work put into it. Had a sequel as well, and then at Shenmue 2, it just kind of dropped off. Now, there was a pretty big following for this game. The fan base for this game is absolutely rabid. They love this game. Me, personally, I got it back in, I want to say, 2000. I think it was 2000 when it came out in the States. It came out then. I didn't particularly care for it that much. And it's just why I'm very weirded out by the kind of reaction that's there. I think it's just because the fan base is rabid. But they announced Shenmue 3. They put it on Kickstarter. It made money, like, instantly. It set records for how fast it made it to $2 million, which is what their goal was.
Yep.
And some interesting stuff has come out afterwards. I'm very happy for the Shenmue fans. But some interesting information has also come out afterwards for it in regards to how it's being funded and what's going on with Sony. And right now, it got to 3 million rather quickly, but it's been kind of sitting dead in terms of funding for the past couple days. So it's a really interesting situation. What are your thoughts on this, Shane?
You know, I gotta be honest, I really don't actually have a whole lot of thoughts on this because I have no experience with the Shenmue series at all. Like, other than I've watched a few, like, gameplay videos of the original, probably a few months back. I have no experience with this whatsoever. Like, it looked like an interesting concept, but to me it seemed like it was perhaps overly ambitious for its time.
It wasn't overly I wouldn't call it overly ambitious when it came out, because it was a really good game. It predated Grand Theft Auto 3 by like 2 years, and it was essentially an open world game just like Grand Theft Auto 3. There was so much you could do. It was a lot slower than Grand Theft Auto 3. It wasn't as hyper violent or as over the top as Grand Theft Auto 3 was. It was very much set in realism. And, of course, you were the hero. You're more of a real hero kind of based character.
Yeah.
Whereas Grand Theft Auto, you're just this thug rolling around doing whatever the hell you want to do. Which is probably more fun for your typical game player. Shenmue 3, just, it grabbed a fan base and it really encaptured them. And
yeah, from what I gathered, it seemed like almost like a life simulator.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. Like, you are just playing the everyday life of this dude.
You're trying to get vengeance.
Yeah.
But
wasn't it like, didn't his father get killed?
Yeah, his father father got killed and he's trying to find his killers.
Yeah.
Now, the big controversy about this is that, yes, it got announced at E3 by Yu Suzuki, who made the original two games.
Right.
He's been wanting, like, when he came out for the Dreamcast, he wanted to make 16 of these or something like that. He wanted to make a game every year. It was supposed to be a serialized game that was supposed to carry save data over from the next to the next. Yeah, it was supposed to be a long-running series. Didn't happen, but he came out there and said he was going to launch a Kickstarter. And that's when it got funded. Well, once it got funded, Sony kind of came out and said, oh, you know, it's there, and yeah, Sony's going to back Shenmue getting released. Now, what happened was is that the internet went ablaze and pretty much said all that putting out Kickstarter was to gauge interest in it. And if the interest was high enough, Sony was going to make it. It doesn't matter if we back this game or not, it's going to exist. Sony's going to make sure it comes off. Which is unfortunate in a way, because this is what Kickstarter is for. First of all, it's not to gauge interest in the public to see whether or not a game should get funded by a major corporation. It's supposed to be for people to do something that's not supposed to be done and see if they can get off the ground with the backing of the public. Because $2 million is not going to cover this game.
No, no, not at all. And I feel like this isn't the first time, and for the life of me, I can't remember the other example, but I feel like there was another Kickstarter recently that kind of did this, where it was more of a, like, we're just trying to gauge interest, and if we hit our goal, then, like, you know, we're... Oh, no, it was Bloodstained. Yeah. I mean, not quite to this degree, I don't think, but it was sort of a similar thing with them, where they were like, you know, hey, I want to make... Like, Iga was like, I want to make this game. I'm putting it up on Kickstarter because I need to show that there's enough interest before I can get, you know, actual investors to put their money into this thing to make it happen.
Spoke of investors. Now, here's the difference. If your investor is someone private, or if even it's another company that's investing into you, that's fine. We're talking about people who are making these hardware is investing into you. Like, hardware right. developers are investing.
Right.
Or a major company is investing. It's not like EGA came out and said, hey, I'm making Bloodstained. And then once it hit its $500,000, Nintendo came out and said, hey, you know what? We're going to make sure this game comes to fruition.
I mean, so basically what it sounds like to me, what you're saying is that like people realized this really quickly. And all that happened was they backed it enough to hit the goal. And then basically it just dropped off because everyone knows that Sony's now going to like pick it up from here.
Even though that's not really the case. Because Sony is only handling so much. Like, the money there is actually the $3 million that they've raised so far. That's the money going towards development. I think Sony's going to be doing, like, the marketing and production and everything like that.
So then that's still a problem, then.
It is a big problem.
If people are taking that approach to it and have kind of stopped backing this for the 20-something, 26 days left or something on it, then... If it only ends up with, like, you know, I don't know, it's at about 3.5 million right now. So if it only ends up with, like, let's say 5 mil or something by the time this thing is over, because everybody just, like, assumes that Sony's going to take the reins from here, will that be enough? Like, it seems like that would actually still end up being an issue then.
See, this is where everything gets complicated with this game, because initially the first game, now granted it includes, you know, when they were production for the Saturn, when it came out for the Saturn and a lot of the pre-development on the Dreamcast, and, you know, they were just getting started with 3D, new hardware transition. But it still was a budget of $47 million in 1999 money.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything's probably a little bit more streamlined. The engine's probably a little bit easier to develop for. You don't need to pour $47 million, especially. It doesn't look like the graphical fidelity for what they have is up to the same level of the graphical fidelity that was out in the Dreamcast at the time, which was head and shoulders above anything that was coming out.
But I mean, do we think that they might have other investors lined up that they just haven't, like, talked about?
Well, of course, you're always going to probably have private investors that you could say, hey, look how successful I was on Kickstarter. Can you send me a few checks?
Yeah.
And you can see that this is going to make a return. So you can see, you know, we're going to give you a kickback in the end. We're going to make sure you're good. But yeah, you can see that the interest is there. But when you look at the backers, yeah, their fan base is rabid. And this is kind of something I touched with on Bloodstain and Yooka-Laylee and Mighty No. 9. I can understand why there was never another Shenmue released. If you released a game and it was supposed to be a major release, like if Capcom released another Mega Man and only sold 50,000 copies, how would they view that game?
It'd be a complete commercial
failure.
Yeah.
At this time, there's only 43,000 backers for Shenmue 3. 43,000. And that was with a major press release. Major press release. Bloodstained didn't have a major press release. Mighty No. 9 didn't have a major press release. Yooka-Laylee didn't have a major press release. But all those games, through word of mouth and kind of people following news stories and kind of hearing about it eventually, made their way. This is a major press release, and here we are a couple of days, and like for the past few days, it really hasn't ticked that much at all. And you're at 43,000. I think this is only going to get to about 48, 50,000 backers, and that's not enough to justify releasing another game, especially at the level with the legacy that this has to continue a series.
Yeah, and it seems like that's the somewhat unique problem for this, is that it is so niche of a title, but then at the same time also is so huge as far as the budget required to make this kind of a game, that those two things really don't mesh that well. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting, to say the least. But like I said, hopefully they've got some investors lined up, because I think they're going to need it.
And one problem, we are on Sony. So one thing I want to briefly address, and this goes back to Final Fantasy VII as well, is Shenmue technically is not an exclusive because it's on the PC. Something True. About Final Fantasy VII, a lot of people I don't think are fully realizing that remake, is they said it would be on PlayStation 4 first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means it's going other places, more than likely. So it's great that Sony got it released at their conference, but just everyone remember, that's not a PS4 exclusive. So, I mean, that's something I'll do when we wrap up Sony, but that's a knock against them, I think. What isn't a knock against them is a game that looks utterly fantastic that is a PS4 exclusive, and that is a game called Horizon Zero Dawn. Have you had an opportunity to take a look at the trailer for it yet?
Actually, I haven't, but I've seen some of the stills that they released for it, and that combined with the description, it looks pretty badass. So it looks like Horizon Zero Dawn is shaping up to be a third-person action game where you are like a hunter type of character. And there's like giant freaking robot dinosaurs. I feel like that's all that really needs to be said about it.
The trailer is fantastic. The trailer is fantastic. Essentially, you're living in a post-apocalyptic world, because why not?
Sure.
And you everyone's acting like cavemen again with technology. And there's robots. And it's somewhat weird, because it had gameplay footage where she's going around, she's trying to hunt these robotic animals or dinosaurs, whatever the case may be.
Mm.
And she like sneaks up on one of the little robots and disposes of it. And it was finally like, she goes, "I'm sorry, little one. I just didn't want you alerting the others." It's a fucking robot.
Well, you
it's
know.
It's a fucking robot. I mean, okay, maybe something's going to come out in the plot that these things are like living, thinking things with, I don't know, but it's a robot. It just was very off-putting.
Hey man,
that was the worst part of the trailer.
That was the worst part where I was just like, stop. In the post-apocalyptic future, like, the robots might be sufficiently advanced, you know?
In that Futurama?
Yeah.
Like Bender?
They have feelings.
I'll just kill baby Bender.
Now see, when you put it like that, you are making my point for me.
Hey, exactly.
And there you go.
I'm sorry, little baby Bender. I didn't mean to kill you.
But yeah, it looks pretty cool. It's like, it looks like that sort of like dumb action craziness that will probably end up turning out to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So, speaking of action craziness, Uncharted 4 also made an appearance.
Well, it had to.
Of course. Not a ton to say about this one. I mean, it looks sexy, as it should.
I know I'm probably going to end up getting it. It's because I need something for my PS4.
I actually think I have, like, Uncharted 2 or something on Steam.
And you shouldn't have it on Steam. It's a PS3 exclusive.
Then what the fuck am I thinking of?
Tomb Raider?
No, no.
It's the same thing.
No, there's something else that I swear is just like Uncharted, and I have it on Steam, and I don't know what it is now.
Hmm.
I don't know. Apparently I'm thinking of something else, but anyway.
Apparently.
Yeah, so again, like I said, not a whole lot to say about this. Not anything that's like super unexpected, but one thing really to note, I guess, is that based on what they've shown so far, it appears that it's going to be a little bit more open world than some of the previous entries in the series, which were a little more of a guided experience, I suppose you could say.
There was also No Man's Sky.
Yeah, speaking of open world, that's open fucking universe.
That looks impossibly fantastic.
I think impossibly is actually a very accurate word for that, because I feel like it's approaching the same sort of concerns that I have about Star Citizen.
Too big?
Yes. That it is promising too much and will not deliver on all of it. That's my problem.
Don't you hope it does?
Of course, and so do the tons of people that have sunk like something like $80-something million into Star Citizen now.
Star Citizen's, the funding for that is just stupid.
Yes, it is, but I don't see any way that that game could deliver on the number of things that they have promised, and I kind of feel a little bit like this game is also approaching that territory, because it is a very ambitious thing that they are trying to pull off here, especially from what I gather is a relatively small and unknown developer. Like, they just kind of came out of nowhere and was like, here's
this...
They're
pretty much indie.
Yeah, they're like, and here's this crazy fucking thing we're doing. And
it's going to be on PC as well.
Yep, it is. It is. So, yes, I really hope that this lives up to everything that they've been showing and discussing about it, because it could turn out to be, like, an amazing game, but I have concerns.
Well, I just have a feeling it's going to be very empty. For those of you who don't know what No... I didn't have the full scoop on what No Man's Sky was until I sat down and looked at the trailer, really. Essentially, you're in a galaxy and you can just travel anywhere there's a dot in the sky. You can go there. And how many dots are there in the sky?
Many, many dots.
Thousands upon thousands
billions
upon thousands. It's just, it's ridiculous all the places you can go to. So, can No Man's Sky be successful? I don't know, because it hasn't shown what's going to happen if, like, you say you run into another player. Or if you're going to have anything beyond just being yourself. If you're going to have the ability to set up, like, outposts and have commands of things. And what's going to happen when you run into other things? Are you going to be able to fill, you know, part of guilds? Are you going to be part of, like, an explorer's association? Or whatever the case may be. They really haven't said a lot of these things that I'm curious about. And if it's just you solo, and you have to explore all these planets and do this exploring, there's so many... It's an impossible number to explore all by yourself. There's no way you're going to be able to explore everything in this game. Ever.
Yeah, like, I actually think I recall that the... I want to say it was Sean Murray is the guy that's been sort of representing Hello Games, which is the developer of this thing. I think he was the one at one point that had said something to the effect of, like, just how long it would actually take a player to explore everything in that game. And it was some, like, impossibly huge number that was probably had some exponential, like, notation involved and all that kind of thing. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping that it turns out to be everything they want it to be.
You need to have at least several million players playing this game in order for it to be truly successful. With the amount of locations you can explore, you're going to need a lot of people to be there. You can't have, like, this cannot be a 500,000 game seller and it'd be like, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm going to run in and run into nobody constantly.
Well, I don't know. That also really depends on the player, I think. Because, I mean, for me at least, this could actually be a single-player game, and I would probably be fine with it. Like, just exploring a universe and, like, finding a new planet every time you go and play and finding these new things and discovering...
To what ends?
There doesn't have to be an end. Just exploring. Like, for me, I think that would be really cool. Like, and actually, to a certain extent... Like, running into some jackass, like, in the middle of the universe who... And I don't even know if this is a possibility in the game or not, but... Like, I don't know, fucking blows up your ship or something. That would actually, like, just piss me off more than anything, because, like, I'm there to explore, and, like, you are basically getting in the way of my gameplay.
I think it'd be interesting. I think it'd be a challenge. I like that.
See, I don't like it. To me, that's, like... It's interrupting, like, what I'm there to do. Like, it's an inconvenience more than anything.
So those are the high points we took away from Sony's conference. Obviously, there's other games announced during this time and other things discussed. But from what I took away from it, a lot of people, the first reaction was, oh my god, just see what Sony did. Mostly in reaction to Final Fantasy VII, Shenmue 3, and The Last Guardian. That was the big thing that a lot of people took out, but... When I sat back and let it breathe for a little bit, I realized these weren't exclusives. There's a lot of potential that this is just relying on rose-colored glasses. They're not new IPs, and they're relying heavily on old gameplay and old tropes. So I think there's a lot left to be desired from Sony. I think of the emotions, it was the most emotional one for people because it was something that was familiar. It was comfort food. And it was what people thought they would never see. So it was like their dreams coming true. But, you know, when I sit back and look at it, I still look at Microsoft and says, that's why I want an Xbox One. As opposed to Sony being like, well, that made me feel good. I think from a business perspective, like, now I want to get an Xbox One. I'm still looking at my PS4 and being like, why do I have you?
Yeah, like...
PS4, I said PS1. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, as much as they got the more, like, visceral reaction from players for, you know, the things that they announced, I would tend to agree that I think Xbox provided much more compelling reasons to own their system this time around, which even I am surprised that I'm saying, because for a while now they have just been kind of dropping the ball, but I think they're maybe finally turning that around. So yeah.
Now, one company that everyone can pretty much agree on that didn't really wow anybody or change anyone's mind about them was Nintendo.
Yeah, but
I mean, they have a terrible conference, but I mean,
do they really ever though? Like, I mean,
they used to.
They used to, sure, but I feel like they're more like very constant. Like, you kind of can expect what you're going to get from them, and it's not a bad thing necessarily, but
I just don't think they care. They don't care anymore. They don't care what we think. I mean, they do, but it's kind of like, oh, you were expecting something big from us? Oh, we don't got anything big. We're just, you know, we're going to do what we want to do, and we hope you like it.
I mean, they did have Muppets.
They opened up with Muppets.
So there is that.
They opened up with Iwata and Reggie Fils-Aimé and Miyamoto. And they had them in Muppet form, turning into the Star Fox characters. I don't think any company makes fun of itself as well as Nintendo does. They make fun of themselves so well.
They are very self-aware. Yeah. Like, I mean, fucking, like, Reggie dropping another, like, my body is ready joke.
Doing the, like, 64 reps of push-ups to
yes.
Nintendo.
Yes, he was doing push-ups in his changing room to the count of Nintendo 62, Nintendo 63.
And then they had Iwata staring at the bananas. I don't know what that's about.
I missed this one. Yeah, so that's actually a reference to something that I missed too, because I don't know what it is. It was bizarre as hell though, but well, that's actually a good way to describe that whole like Muppet segment. It was just really fucking bizarre, but it was entertaining, and it's something you're gonna remember because here we are talking about it. So I guess that achieved what they were looking for.
I think this shows you how much of the ultimate troll Nintendo is. Like, they are so aware of what the internet says and thinks about them. And yet they joke about it. And then they're like, oh, let's do a YouTube video about that. And like, no, we're taking your money. You can't post this. This is ours. And then they like make fun of them. And Nintendo comes out and like, yeah, screw your internet video. Ha ha ha. And everyone's like, ha ha ha. That's so funny. But it's true.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing with them. Like in some cases, they're like still the sort of like weird, endearing company. Like, out of the major three, and then they also, like, still do this really... What's the word I'm looking for? They still take some very dated, like, approaches, or misinformed approaches to things like YouTube videos and YouTubers in general and stuff like that. Like, on one hand, they're like the well-meaning uncle at, like, a family reunion. Like, everybody thinks he's, like, super entertaining, but then at the same time, it's like, he just does some really weird shit that everyone just, like, doesn't really like, but let's not talk about it now because we don't want to ruin, like, the mood or anything.
I don't even think it's that, because that'd be, like, the uncle that knows he does weird shit, and then he does weird shit in satire of the weird shit he does, and then, like, everyone still complains about the weird shit he does. That's kind of what Nintendo is. Like, they do this stupid stuff, and then everyone calls them out on the stupid stuff. And in E3, they make fun of the stupid stuff they do.
And then,
like, acknowledging the stupid stuff they do is stupid, and they still continue to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we know what we do is stupid, but we're still going to do it. We don't care. Like, we're still making money. Hey, we have a new Amiibos coming out. We know you're going to buy them.
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
All we got to say is a major brand franchise, and it's coming out soon, and you're going to buy it.
Yeah, oh, you guys are really, like, upset about our YouTube video policies. Well, Zelda!
Exactly.
And then suddenly everybody forgets.
Yes. And they were hoping everyone would forget this year with Star Fox Zero.
Yeah. So it's being co-developed with Platinum Games and...
the director of Bayonetta 2.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Okay. This is going to be sort of the, like, theme du jour for the Nintendo coverage here, which is... It's not really anything that we weren't expecting.
We knew, like, we know you're going to talk about this.
Yeah, so it's Star Fox. It looks pretty cool. Is that the one that... I fucking pre-ordered stuff today. I don't even know what it is.
Star Fox Zero. It's the one with the Star Fox. It's the same one? It's the one with Star Fox on it.
Yep, yeah. Oh, thank you, Chris. I appreciate that.
You know, I'm just trying to help you, you know, as a spaceship and a Fox character.
Yes, and some Japanese symbol on it that I'm assuming means Star Fox and or Zero.
I think it just means Fox, but I'm not sure.
No idea. Like,
Miyamoto had a little segment during the conference that he was explaining what the kanji meant.
Ah.
And I can't remember what he said about it. But, like, at the end of it, he said it looked like a tail. So he made the end of it, like, wrap around the Star Fox.
It does, in fact, look like a fox tail.
The only thing I can really say about Star Fox is I watched a couple of the... some of the gameplay, a lot of the gameplay. Some things that are upsetting is they haven't confirmed online multiplayer, but they're considering local co-op, which is weird for that portion. Not every game needs to have multiplayer, but Star Fox, since 64, has kind of been known for it.
But does it include barrel rolls?
What do you think?
I mean, I don't know.
Of course it's going to include barrel rolls. It's Star Fox.
Well there you
I'm
go.
Sorry. It's going to have aileron rolls.
Yes, that is true. They are not actually barrel rolls.
But yes, it will have what many people who play Star Fox refer to as barrel rolls.
Well, good. Then yeah. my $5 deposit on my pre-order is justified.
Completely. The only thing I want to see in how it acts is, like, in order to aim and shoot your, you know, R-Wing, I think is what it's called.
Please don't tell me it's motion.
You use the gamepad.
Son of a bitch.
And you move it around to aim, which is... And while on your TV screen, it's like a cinematic graphical presentation, while what you're in your R-Wing is more of like you're flying in the aircraft and you look around and use your laser to target onto, which I think can be really fun on one hand, and on the other hand, it will get old really quick. It's a little bit of both. But you have transformations that call back to the unreleased Star Fox 2, which is interesting. Control-wise, though, I think the jury's going to be out. I want to get my hands on it first. Who knows? I mean, Miyamoto hasn't really done much wrong in terms of a game being fun.
I don't know, though. That controls thing kind of concerns me a little bit. I suppose if there was an option... to, like, not use that would be good. I mean, that was one of the things that kind of saved Splatoon for me.
Didn't save Splatoon. You didn't buy it, so nothing was saved.
I mean, saved in that, like, I might actually buy it. Because okay. If it was just relegated to you have to point your paint gun by fucking moving the Wii U pad around, that I would not buy it at all. But having that option, it there's some hope. Hopefully.
But Star Fox, I think it looks pretty good. We'll see how it is as time develops. And, you know, Star Fox, finally gameplay footage of it. So that's good. It wasn't the big boom that we thought it would be.
It is good. Although, okay, so I guess I'm going back a little bit on what I said earlier. Because this is actually a little surprising. Nintendo has announced that they are partnering with Activision to bring... a Skylanders and Amiibo crossover. So, finally, those two things that are cluttering up your children's shelves are now going to become one in an unholy fusion.
Well, we thought Nintendo was going to go one step further anyway with this last week. Or I think I brought it up or 2 weeks ago whenever we did this for our E3 preview.
Mm-hmm.
I said it was only... maybe it might have been when I personally talked to you. I can't remember if we said it on the podcast. But when I said that, I kind of expected Nintendo to release their own Skylanders game.
Yeah.
Where they release a game that you could use the Amiibos and they'd be activated as Skylanders. Maybe this is a test run for them. Maybe. I don't know. I think it's easier to have Activision kind of play around with it and see how successful it is than them to make their own game themselves. I think it only helps Activision because of the rabid fascination with Amiibo that these things individually are just going to fly off the shelves and make Activision and Nintendo a lot of money. I actually think, I don't know, I don't hate this. I don't hate this, and I should. I should hate this because myself as a parent, my kids love Skylanders, so I know this is going to be the next thing I'm going to have to get for them.
Again, this just goes back to why I'm glad that I have held off on investing into either of these, because this just looks like a giant money pit that I will never be able to dig myself out of.
It is.
But, I mean, on paper, it sounds really cool. Like, I mean, I guess the figures, you just, like, twist the base on it to activate Skylander or Amiibo mode. And the first game that's going to support this whole amalgamation is Skylander's Superchargers, which, if you're, like, super interested in this, is also up for pre-order right now. And it's going to be featuring Bowser and Donkey Kong as the first two, like, supercharged crossover figures that you're going to be able to purchase. So,
I want to see supercharged Mega Man.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen, though.
I mean, I think you're right that this seems to be, like, sort of a testbed thing for them, because it seems like it would be much easier for them to just partner up with Activision because there's already a very well-established system they got going on there. So they're like, well, we've got the Amiibos, and, you know, we're kind of doing fuck all with them right now as far as functionality goes. So why don't we just talk to these folks who have been doing this for years now?
Well, I just see Amiibo like Sonic and Mega Man and Pac-Man, and when Ryo gets his, Ryu, and like Mr. Game & Watch, and just these like obscure characters like Duck Hunt.
Mm.
What are these characters going to do outside of Super Smash Brothers?
Stuff and things, like,
nothing. Just nothing. And so I was really, yeah, I'm looking forward. I don't want to say looking forward.
No, to it, it's too late.
I already said it.
It's been said now.
But it's nice to see Nintendo is looking at the Amiibo for what pretty much everybody else on this fucking planet was thinking they're going to be used for at some point. And having you put it on the fucking NFC area and then it being uploaded in the game like a Skylander. It's about goddamn time.
I mean, I will agree with that, because that was part of when it was, like, announced way back when. That was part of the reason that I was initially interested in it, because I thought that was, like, okay, I didn't want to invest in Skylanders, because I don't know what the fuck they even are. There's no connection for me at all. They're just random-ass, like, monsters that people created. Whatever. But having actual Nintendo characters have that kind of a functionality with, like, a game built around it or something like that, that I could have got on board with. And it never happened. So they've just become, like, these collectible figures that really have no purpose outside of Smash. And somehow people still go nuts over them.
At least the price isn't terrible for them.
Yeah, I mean, they're what, like $12? Well, retail, they're like $12 or $13.
Collectible figures. People still have collectible figures that don't do anything except be collectible. So, can't hate on Amiibos too much.
I see you looking at my Ninja Turtles.
What? Can you put them on a Skylanders portal?
No, because they weren't meant to do that, Chris. That was the point. I wasn't promised that there would be some sort of other functionality when I bought a fucking Ninja Turtle action figure. No. It was just, it's a figure. That's all it is.
What if I have the Amiibo?
And I got what I expected. No.
I'm getting what I expect out of the Amiibo.
Now that's what you expect.
That's what I expect. Is there anything wrong with that now then?
Yes.
Okay.
I have been let down by Nintendo, and I will not.
We all been let down by Nintendo.
I will not support their, like, little plastic crack habit.
Yeah, before we get to a game that we actually played, I just want to announce that, Nintendo, I'm pissed off at you for not announcing F-Zero. Screw you. That was my call. That was my call that no one else was predicting that F-Zero would be announced at E3, and you didn't announce F-Zero. So screw you.
Because wasn't there, like, a whole bunch of shit leading up to it? Like, there was the F-Zero music in, like, the eShop for a while.
Yes.
And then, like, with the release of the F-Zero, like, tracks in the DLC for Mario Kart.
And the cart.
And the cart.
And the fact that it was a Nintendo Land. And they released a Captain Falcon amiibo, but that was going to help him because he was in the game anyway. But that he could use, they could use him for something outside of Smash Brothers. No F-Zero. I'm very, very, very butthurt that there is no F-Zero.
Like, have you gone back and played, like, the Super Nintendo F-Zero lately?
Yes, I have. I own every version of F-Zero on the console. I own X on the N64, and I own GX on the GameCube, and I own the Virtual Console version of the SNES one because it was 30 cents.
Because I actually went back and played that, like, I don't know, a few months back or whatever, and I am terrible at that game.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard.
It really is.
And guess what? As they progress forward, like the N64 one and the GameCube one, they don't get easier.
No, that's
they
like...
But they get better. That's the weird thing. They get better, but they definitely don't get easier.
Like, last year's Awesome Games Done Quick Marathon, like, I try to make a point of watching that because it's always pretty interesting because they do things I will never be able to do. And for those of you who don't know what that is, just a quick sidetrack here. It's a yearly charity event that gets streamed live on Twitch, and it's like a week long, I believe, where the speedrun gaming community will speedrun games one after another to raise money for charity, and it is a cool thing. So if you have the time to watch that, I would recommend it the next time it comes around. But I remember seeing last year's and some people played through like F-Zero, and the crazy shit that those people pull off in those games, like I cannot even begin to think of how to do that. Like, I can't even properly finish a race in F-Zero, let alone like do some of that crazy shit. But
F-Zero is awesome, and fuck Nintendo for not saying a new F-Zero was coming. They got my hopes up.
But moving on to some games that actually Chris and I have had a chance to get our hands on.
Yes.
Today, as a matter of fact. Zelda Triforce Heroes is one of the new Zelda titles that has been announced by Nintendo. And we were lucky enough to attend a Nintendo demo event for both that and Mario Maker, which we will get into shortly. And I was pleasantly surprised.
I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah. Because they've tried this thing before with, like, four swords. I mean, the conceit of this game, basically, is that you are multiple links playing together to achieve, you know, certain objectives. And like I said, they tried it with four swords, but that was more, like, local gameplay, so it was a little more janky. With this one, it is absolutely supporting online multiplayer on your 3DS. That's where this thing lives. And though we played it locally at the demo, it was a surprisingly fun experience. Of course, it's a lot easier when you have your other players standing literally right next to you. Because,
and you could, like with Four Swords, you'd have to do that too. You could talk to them right there.
Right, yeah. So collaboration is a lot easier because a lot of it, to be expected with Zelda, I guess, is sort of like puzzle-based, where to get the three of you through the dungeon that you're in, like you have to collaborate to figure out puzzles, like shooting arrows through torches to light other torches, or picking up another player so that you are standing tall enough to be able to hit something that you otherwise wouldn't be able to, or like tossing bombs into like certain areas and stuff like that. So I had a lot of fun with it, actually. The two people that I played with were at least competent, and we managed to get through the entirety of a dungeon and beat the boss, which was cool. What was your experience with it? Did you?
I had a really similar experience, I think, in opinion. When I was playing it, the thing I had the biggest worry about is this is supposed to be an online game, and you know Nintendo's against voice chat, and I don't think I could have made it through that dungeon if I wasn't able to talk to the people right next to me. That was the problem. Now, of course, if you're going through a single player, or, you know, you turn on the game, it's probably going to introduce you to the mechanics that were required for us to get through, right? And that's I'm not going to have that there because they're just doing a simple demo with the three people around you. But if they don't, oh Christ, it's going to be damn hard. because you're not going to be able, like, I'm going to be like, hey, let's try this. Hey, what do you think we should do here? I'm not going to be able to talk to the person on the other side of that screen. And that's something I'm going to need to do probably to get through a lot of these puzzles.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing what we did today without being able to, like, communicate effectively at all. Like, it would be frustrating to the point of where I would just put the game down and probably never play it again.
Because if you're teaming up with stupid...
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're not teaming up with stupid, if you're teaming up with just someone... If you're teaming with someone as competent as you, but you just... You go into a new level and you're not sure what you're supposed to do, and one of you figures it out, how are you supposed to communicate to the other people, hey, let's do this, for them to see it?
Yeah, and I talked to the Nintendo rep that put this thing on, Sherry. She's pretty awesome. She's our local Nintendo representative, so she's the one that puts these things on all the time. And I had a quick discussion with her about Triforce Heroes after I got a chance to play it. And just kind of asked her if she knew more about how this thing was going to work, as far as, like, if there's a single-player component, considering that it seems this is entirely built around the conceit that it's going to be three people working together. And at this time, the game is not complete enough that I guess we don't have that information. So...
Or at least at her level.
Well, yeah, at least at her level. So, as far as we know, there really isn't much to say about that just yet. If it has some sort of ability to chat, like, preferably voice chat, like, I don't care if I even have to talk through the mic hole that is on the 3DS. Like, as long as there is a way to communicate effectively with your teammates, this will work really well. Because it seems like it's competently built. It was fun. It was...
What a blast.
Yeah, it was, like, really enjoyable to figure out the solutions to these dungeons and then collaborate with people to get it done.
Sense of accomplishment. It's everything great about a team-based Zelda game.
Yeah, so I actually have some pretty high hopes for this one. And the other thing to mention, some of the mechanics that we saw... in it. So each dungeon, and I guess you can choose which one you want to do, and like the three people that you're sort of like in a lobby, and then the three of you vote on which dungeon you want to run, and then it does like a roulette system where it will take the three choices that you picked and then just do like a random roulette through the three. So like if you all pick the same one, you'll obviously get the same one. Or if two out of the three pick the same thing, you'll have a better chance of getting what you wanted. And then once you get past that and you've selected the level and all that, then you can also choose your outfit for your particular Link. And each outfit gives you a different ability. Like the one that I picked at the suggestion of the guy that was running the demo was the samurai outfit, which I think gave you basically the... sword spin ability that if you've ever played a Zelda game, you know what that is. So there's that, and then you can also pick which item. You get one item that you can bring in with you apart from just your sword. And
you just better hope not everyone picks the same item.
Yeah, which again is where communication comes in, because when you pick the dungeon, it tells you like which items it suggests you're going to need to successfully complete it. Like the one that we picked,
it's bombs and arrows.
Yeah, it suggested that one person picked the bow and arrow and then the other two picked bombs, which is what we did. And surprisingly, it worked out really well. So it seems like there's a cool amount of like customization there, and overall, very good experience. So that actually ended up being one of the things that I ended up pre-ordering today, because they were running this sort of deal thingy where if you pre-order two games at Best Buy, and as long as you are a My Best Buy Rewards member, which surprisingly I still am, I had to have them look it up, but as long as you do that, then you become eligible for this like cool little limited edition like 7-button collectible set, and it's actually technically an 8-button set if you really want to get pedantic about it, because you get, if you went to one of these events like the one we went to today, you got a handy dandy 30th anniversary Mario pin that kind of goes along with the set that you'll get in, I guess, December when these pre-orders and everything go through. So,
well, the event also included the game Mario Maker, Super Mario Maker.
Yes, it did.
And that game, I don't think it was the best. Like, that wasn't the best way to demo the game. That wasn't the best way to demo it because you were playing already generated levels.
Yeah,
I think the purpose of that was to show what you could do with the Maker Mario Maker equipment and what kind of levels could be created. I kind of would like to see what kind of tools would be available when they actually have Mario Maker up and running. I think I would have liked to like get a crack at creating a level, and that wasn't there today. That was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing because you are basically missing a giant portion of what makes that game what it is. But at the same time,
it's understandable.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take a while to create a level.
Right. You have a very limited time with a lot of people. Like, we were standing in line, like, waiting for this, and they were timing people playing, and I think you got, like, 3 minutes or something is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that, but yeah, I would like to actually see some of the tools that are going to be available for this. I mean, based on just the pre-generated, like, levels that they had available to play today, it looks like it has some pretty decent amount of flexibility. I mean, I played a more traditional sort of Mario level that was created, but you, unsurprisingly, picked something very different.
Yeah, I picked in the description it said, they made the level based off a shmup.
Yeah.
It was like a clown that you jump, but like I jumped into Bowser's clown mobile, and they gave you a fire flower, and your objective was to make it to the end while avoiding all the bullets from the Hammer Bros and cannons and homing bullets and all that stuff like that. You're supposed to avoid all that while throwing flames of fire flower at enemies to knock them out and to make your journey easier. It was a blast. I had a lot of fun with it. I never got the feeling, even watching any of the levels, even the ones where you could transform, like they were doing anything completely out of the realm of a Mario game. Like, yeah, sure, it felt like a Mario hack, but it didn't feel like anything that felt too out of place, which I enjoyed. But at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, I was playing this game, I was actually on my way here, and I was thinking, I wonder if I could remake the NES version of Batman, but with Mario. Like, being able to do wall jumps. But, like, if he gets a fire flower, limit the amount of times he can throw a fire flower as a special weapon, and have, like, wall jumps be a critical part of that, and all that stuff like that. I wonder if I could alter that, or if I could do other things to really alter the way Mario is played, or do I have to play by the rules?
Yeah, I mean, and that's really going to come down to what level of customization they put into it. I know that I can say, at least for the wall jumping, that I saw one level that somebody played where Mario was able to, like wall jump off of things.
Well, you can in the newer ones.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, based on what I think I know about this, I think you can mix and match, like, from different Mario generations.
Well, you can limit what Mario can and can't do.
Yeah, so, like, I think you could have some mechanics from newer Mario games, but then also include, like, older assets and stuff like that and mix and match them. I mean, I know, I didn't see it played. I don't know if anybody picked it, but there was one of the pre-generated levels that basically tried to recreate, like, a Legend of Zelda dungeon from, like, Adventure of Link era kind of thing. So, obviously, side-scroller.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's possible. Like, I don't know. Maybe you could, like, remake Castlevania in Mario Maker if you really wanted to. I don't know. Like, I don't know how extensive it's going to be.
You can tell it's not as extensive as Little Big Planet, and that's the disappointing part, especially because I think I asked the question how much it was going to cost, and they still said it was going to cost $60. And that is a no-go for me. That's a deal killer. Like, they need to... This needs to be at most $40.
Well, yeah, this feels to me like somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, Captain Toad.
Yeah.
It's like, not, somewhere in there.
You're creating most of the content anyway, and other people are. It's not like Nintendo's creating the content.
I will say one of the interesting things I overheard while standing in line, and I don't know how true it is, and it didn't come from, like, Sherry, so it wasn't, like, an official source or anything, but that I guess when you create a level, you can't submit it online for other people to play it
until
you've actually beaten it yourself, which I think is actually a kind of a cool, like, fail-safe there, so that, you know, people aren't just making ridiculously impossible levels to throw out there to just troll people.
And then just laugh at you.
Yeah.
So, that, I mean, Mario Maker was pushed very, very much at the Nintendo conference. That was their biggest pull. We already knew about it, so, I mean, people didn't really care about the fact Nintendo was talking about it. In fact, I think the biggest sell for Mario Maker was at the Nintendo World Championships, which we're not going to delve too much into in this podcast. I watched them. They were okay. Had some interesting things. Somewhat disappointing. But Mario Maker really sold some copies at the Nintendo World Championships because those had some really unique levels, which I wish were on display today at Best Buy during that event. But they were not, unfortunately. Now, the biggest controversy to come out of the Nintendo conference, and it actually has to do with Nintendo World Championships, is the new Metroid game, which...
You're actually going to have to fill me in on this one because I'm a little like light on the details on this.
Okay, so the first debut of this game was Nintendo World Championships, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they made it past the first round and then got to the second round and they're like, hey, look everyone, a world premiere of a game. And everyone's like, oh, world premiere, I wonder what this is going to be. And then they said it was called Blast Ball. They didn't say it was Metroid. They said it was Blast Ball, and they looked at the way it was played, and the entire crowd was kind of like, "What's this stuff?" So essentially, this game called Blast Ball. It was a 3-on-3 game, and the point was to shoot a ball into the other goal.
Okay.
In like futuristic robot things, and I gotta give credit to IGN because immediately afterwards, IGN was like, "Did Nintendo just show their next Metroid game?" Everyone's like, "This isn't Metroid. You're fucking stupid." So Nintendo has their press conference and they come out with the game that said Metroid Federation Force, and it was these guys and essentially what looks like Ripley kills the queen alien with in Aliens when she shoves her out the airlock.
The loader
it looks like a bunch of people up in a bunch of loaders moving around. And then it said Metroid Prime Blitzball, which is what they saw at Nintendo World Championships the night before. People were furious. They were not happy. In fact, on their trailer on YouTube, if you go there, like, people have just bombed their dislikes. It's hilarious. Metroid fans are hugely upset right now.
I mean, this seems like one of those things where you have to wonder why Nintendo didn't see that coming.
They don't care. I've told you this. They do not care.
I mean, this is like basically just coming out and being like, yeah, I don't know, we're making another fucking like Metroid pinball. Enjoy.
Yeah. Or Metroid Prime Hunters, which apparently people like. I don't know who liked that. I don't know. I thought it was crap. Look, bad Metroid games have happened before. I mean, I understand people are starting to get frustrated because they didn't like Other M. And it's been a while since Prime 3 Corruption, and they want another Metroid game. I get it. But this game looks like it could be fun. You just don't want to play it because it has Metroid on it. That's the biggest hang-up with a lot of these people, it seems.
Well, yes. I mean, if it had just been some random game that was not associated with a long-standing franchise that people have been waiting for a legitimate entry into, then sure. Like, people would take it for what it is, but It's one of those things where now everyone's like, oh, okay, so this is what we're getting for our next Metroid installment, and they're pissed.
And people thought it was like a lost level from Nintendo Land. That's what they thought about it. That's not good.
No. No, no, it is not.
But what is good
is
how Xenoblade Chronicles X is looking.
I mean, do you have, like, about 300 hours? Because apparently that's how long it's going to take to finish that thing in its entirety.
That was, like, the first one. The first one was the same way.
Sure.
Well, that's for completionists. Like, okay, if you're going to go through the main plot, it's not going to take 300 hours. They'd be stupid if it took that.
No.
The first game, I played the first game, beat it, and did a lot of the side quests, and I don't even think I was... I think I was over 50% done with the side quests. I know I had at least 100 to 150 more side quests to do. So I was about over 50%, maybe 60 or 70% done with all the side quests. Yeah, I clocked in that game and I rushed the last 10-20% of that game, just blew right through it. And I clocked in at a time at 110 hours.
Yeah. All right.
So the fact that they're saying 300 hours to complete that, that doesn't surprise me. It's it doesn't surprise me at all, but I am looking forward to it because I get to jump in a robot.
Yeah, so I actually have never played Xenoblade at all, which I think Chris is going to want to like rectify after I get around to playing FF7.
Yes.
And I'm not going to get it for my 3DS because I don't have a new 3DS and I'm not going to buy one. So I guess I'll have to wait for this if I'm going to play a new Xenoblade. But I mean, in theory, I like the idea of like a super intense, like immersive, like RPG like that. The problem I'm having with that nowadays is that I just don't like have the time to sink into that. Like, I still have Pillars of Eternity sitting in my Steam list, and I've only put maybe 15 hours into it. And that game is going to require at least four times that much to finish it. I don't know. It just seems daunting.
But it was another one of those Nintendo trailers that... This is a running theme for Nintendo. Is, we know it was coming out. We've seen a lot for it. I think this game's already out in Japan, to be honest with you. Like, it's already out there. I think that was the most disappointing thing about the Nintendo conference. Is that we knew everything that was coming out. And things we didn't know that were coming out just either didn't have that much fanfare, were leaked. Like, the Hyrule Warriors game was leaked.
Yeah.
And so we already knew about that. Like, I don't think people know what to make of Zelda Triforce Heroes yet. And they were just completely bummed up by Metroid. It was very, very predictable. It was very... I think people were expecting that big announcement, like I was hoping for F-Zero.
Mm.
And they just didn't see it. Everything was something we have seen before or knew about coming into E3, and they didn't have the punch Sony or Microsoft did with these big announcements.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that really the only even remotely surprising thing about it was the Amiibo crossover, right? That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that was really surprising to me. I didn't see Nintendo... I thought Nintendo, if they were going to do that, they would do that on their own. I didn't see them going to Activision for that. I think that was interesting. But I will say, now that we're all done with the big three, looking back at it, Nintendo's conference, yeah, it was boring and I was upset because I was expecting more because it just kind of fizzled out and ended as opposed to big announcements. But, like, I'm looking at this pre-order list from the event we went through today. And I look at it, and I'm like, oh, Yo-Kai Watch? Yeah, you know what? My kids and my wife might like Yo-Kai Watch. Mario and Luigi Paper Jam? You know, I don't think it's on the pre-order list. But that looks really interesting, where they have Mario and Luigi meet with Paper Mario Saga.
Like, as that. Long as it's not fucking, what is it, Sticker Star?
It's not going to be Sticker Star.
Yeah. Please don't be that.
It's Mario and Luigi. That series combined with Paper Mario.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. But it looks interesting. And there's just a lot of games. Like Xenoblade Chronicles X, I'm looking forward to. Yoshi's World World, I'm looking forward to. Mario Maker, as long as it's not $60, I'm looking forward to. Star Fox Zero, I'm looking forward to. It's like almost every game in there, with the exception of like Animal Crossing, because I really don't care for that series. I'm looking forward to, and I can't say the same thing. Like, I don't see anything overly negative about the games Nintendo launched. Like, I don't look at any of them like, wow, this is going to be really interesting to see if they can pull this off. I look at them as like, I know I'm going to enjoy them. It just seems too many asterisks and caveats to all the other games that were announced at the other conferences for me to really go, like, both feet in and be as interest in those games is what Nintendo launched. I think that's what Nintendo had going for them out of E3.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, on one hand, they say that it's all pretty predictable, and it is, and Nintendo has been that way for quite some time, actually. And they do get a lot of flack for sort of relying very heavily on their pre-established franchises, but at the same time, you know, it's... I have to agree with you where, you know, I'm looking at this list and it's all things that we've seen before. It's Yoshi, it's Star Fox, it's Mario, it's Zelda, it's all of the pillars that we've come to expect. But it all looks really good, and it all looks well done, and it looks like it's something that we're all excited to see, and that's not unusual for Nintendo. Like, that's something that is at least consistent.
All right, now, the big three weren't the only people to have conferences at E3. I mean, there was Bethesda, EA, Square Enix, and Ubisoft, the most notable. I mean, everyone has their own conferences. I mean, Bethesda, we kind of already got a taste with Fallout 4 the week before. We've kind of already touched on Fallout 4. They showed that. They showed the Doom demo. And EA, they showed off some pretty good stuff, just to quickly touch on it, because Shane hasn't played the Mass Effect series. Bad Shane.
Yes, I know. Mass Effect 1 and 2 are sitting in my Steam backlog, and then apparently 3 is like a Origin exclusive. Which means I don't own it, because I still refuse to use Origin. But
if you have a 360, you can get on that.
I can.
But Mass Effect Andromeda was announced, which I'm semi-excited for. I kind of thought Mass Effect wrapped up well enough at the end of 3.
Was that before or after they changed the ending?
Both. I think people who cried about the ending at 3 need to shut the fuck up. It ended. It's a game ending. Not all of them are great. Get over it. I understand. It's not your story. It was BioWare's story. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you were just along for the ride and you got to feel special. But I still think it wrapped up quite well. They announced Mirror's Edge Catalyst. I have not even seen the trailer for this yet. It's Mirror's Edge. I hope they made a lot of improvements over the first one, but you seem to like the first one.
Well, did you get a chance to play it?
I didn't.
No?
I didn't at all.
Yeah, I did. I picked it up on Steam at one point on some sale or another, and I was actually pleasantly surprised with it. I had held off on buying it for quite a while because I wasn't really sold on the whole first-person parkour thing, but it actually pulled it off really well. So, and the aesthetic of the game was pretty nice too. So overall, it was a good experience, and I'm actually kind of looking forward to this new one.
What I'm looking forward to, though, is Star Wars Battlefront, which is coming from EA. Holy crap, does that game look really good?
It really does, and it's not typically my kind of game, but. And I suppose if it wasn't Star Wars, I would not care at all. But it is. And so I do. But based just on the trailer that they showed, I am suddenly now a lot more interested in that than I was before.
Looking at it, yeah, it's not the kind of game. It's a first-person shooter. I'm not usually into first-person shooters. It seems like they were playing Horde mode in the gameplay trailer, because I saw, like, wave this, wave that.
Yeah.
It looks absolutely beautiful, though. And the environments just look gorgeous. I can't imagine what it would look like on a big screen TV, my big screen TV, or anything. It looks fantastic. Gameplay looks really nice, looks really polished, looks really tightened up. I know a lot of people are worried about the DLC packs. They're worried about how they're going to try and exploit this game. I think that's a valid reason to be worried as well. What they're going to be doing and how they're going to be, if microtransactions are going to be involved. But graphically and gameplay wise, it looks very solid. And I'm looking forward to seeing more information about it coming out.
And just because it's an FPS, well, it's an FPS that you can also swap to third person perspective, which I appreciate. But because it is a shooter, let's say. For me, at least, this will definitely be a PC purchase.
Mm-hmm. Moving on, Ubisoft, they announced a whole slew of games. But the one that stuck out the most, I mean, they had their Assassin's Creed. I think they had Rainbow Six. Was Rainbow Six during Ubisoft's? It may have been. I don't know, but...
I think that was actually involved with, like, the Microsoft conference, actually.
I know, we were talking about earlier. But, The big thing to take away from Ubisoft was South Park Fractured Butthole. That's butthole with a W, of course.
Yes, as in something that is fractured yet still whole.
Butthole.
So I guess this is going to play very similarly to Stick of Truth, and if you haven't played that and the concept of it being a South Park game does not entirely turn you off, because I know that is a case for some people, I would recommend it. It turned out to be a really, really good RPG based in the South Park world. And if you've watched the show, then you'll appreciate all the detail that they put into it and all the references to a lot of the episodes that you recognize. But I guess this one's going to play a lot the same way, except this time around it's not going to be a fantasy setting like Stick of Truth was. It's going to involve the superheroes from the show, such as the Coon.
The King.
Yeah, it looks... The first one, I played a little bit of the first one, didn't get really too much into it. I still want to pick it up and get it, because it was fun from what I played. I just hope they didn't just blow their load totally on the first one, because they had so many references. It was so encompassing, and it was such a great game. I just hope they didn't just... All their creative thinking just didn't go all into that game, because hopefully they kept some for the sequel. The superhero aspect with the Coon and all that stuff like that. Yeah, that could be a lot of fun. And it's good to see Ubisoft brought that back. Very excited to look in and go ahead and play this game, because it was gorgeous on the PS3 and the Xbox 360. So I can't imagine what they're going to be doing with it on the next-gen systems. So really looking forward to it.
Yeah. I played through Stick of Truth all the way on my PC, and I was very happy with it.
In the press conference of E3 that I think was universally reviled was Square Enix. And I have to start out by just saying, fuck Square Enix. Fuck you.
That was actually in the show notes, I might add.
Fuck you. And I have a major reason for this. I have a major reason for saying, fuck you, Square Enix. When they come out with a pre-press release describing their press conference, and the music to the press conference is Frog's theme from Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
You're making a preview of your press conference with Frog's theme from Chrono Trigger, and the only thing I can think of, they're going to make some major announcements regarding that series. Whether or not they're going to port it. You know, I was thinking, at the very worst, they would port it to Steam, like that announcement they made with Final Fantasy VII a few months ago. Or they put it on, like, the 3DS, another remake, or something like that. I was thinking, this is the worst they could possibly do. So what does Square Enix do with Chrono Trigger? What they've been doing for the past, oh, I don't know, like, 20 years, and say, fuck it, we're not telling you anything. You're not getting Chrono Trigger. It's just a cool song we like to play with our other shit.
Yes, there was a not insignificant amount of butthurt that happened with that conference. I distinctly remember...
Fuck you, Square Enix.
I distinctly remember that even my own Facebook feed ended up filling up with some people that had some choice words about their music selection for that particular instance. So no Chrono Trigger. Again.
And that just cost 3. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Star Ocean 5. Surprised they didn't talk more about Dragon or the new Front Mission game.
Yeah.
They replayed the Final Fantasy Worlds thing they did from Sony. Everything they put on Sony's conference was back in their conference again for their press release. It just was very strange.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, there were at least a couple notable things, right?
There were a couple notable things. Of course, Kingdom Hearts 3, which they completely botched the conference for. They didn't know how to make it work, and there's still no release date, and it's still classified as in production. But they showed some gameplay footage. And if you're into Kingdom Hearts, if you haven't given up on it, like I damn near have, because they came out with 2, and then they started to come out with all these names with silly, stupid-ass games, names to them, like Dream Drop Distance, and 356 over 7 days, or whatever the hell it was called, and coded, and recoded, and because there were ports of mobile games, you couldn't tell if the game you're playing was the original, or if it was a remake of a mobile game, or a demake of a PS2 game, and just fuck you, Square Enix. Figure it out. Get Kingdom Hearts 3 out. Stop it.
I'm one of the ones that have not ever played a Kingdom Hearts game, and I've...
Like, it's game number 3.
Yeah, I know, yeah. And so, coming in basically completely fresh to this whole series and trying to figure out where to go, apart from, you know, just playing the first one. Like, I looked at the timeline, and it is, like, confusing as shit. And on top of that, there's no clear indication of which game to play when, if you want, like, at least a remotely chronologically accurate, like, playthrough of this thing. Like, going into, I actually remember fairly recently walking into a game store and, like, looking and seeing, like, a Recoded, actually, I think it was, and looking at it and be like, okay, I mean, do I want this? Like, is this a remake of the original so I can play it on a portable device? Is it a reimagining of it? Is it a prequel? Is what the fuck is this? And
was it Recoded or Rechain of Memories or what? I don't know.
Oh, it's Chain of Memories.
Chain of Memories
is another one. Yes,
yeah.
And I actually think I have one of them sitting on my shelf for GBA, which I believe actually is Chain of Memories. And I'm still not sure exactly what the fuck that game is.
It's a card game.
Great.
It's a battle card game.
Fucking great.
No, it's supposed to be fun.
That's, I mean, awesome, whatever, but, like, I was not... Okay, I asked what that game was when I went into the store to buy it.
Yeah.
And I was told that it was, like... chronologically somewhere between like 1 and 2, but it told like a slightly different story branching off of one of them or something.
Was it? Oh.
And so like there was actually no indication made that it was a fucking card game. Now I've got this game sitting over there that I don't even know if I want to play.
Well, I mean, like a lot of RPG card games from then were pretty fun. Like you had the Pokemon card game, you had SNK versus Capcom Card Fighters Clash, which no one on this planet probably remembers. And you have that game, card games, Yu-Gi-Oh games, popular.
I don't know, man. It's just like, so there's
card games.
There's one thing with like, because the other thing that comes to mind with like really confusing, well, no, but really confusing like chronology is like Zelda. But
that was never supposed to have a chronological. I can't even say the fucking word name.
But
it wasn't supposed to have a timeline.
But that's kind of the point, is that like while now we have a canon timeline, it's you don't have to play those games in any real order to get a sense of anything because they basically stand on their own.
Yes.
With Kingdom Hearts, from what I've gathered, that's not really the case. Like if you go and play just one random fucking Kingdom Hearts game out of this weird list that they have, you're not really gonna understand everything, and there's gonna be things that are gonna get brought up that you're gonna have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, the difference between Zelda and Kingdom Hearts is that, like, they made a chronology to Zelda because, like, all the fans demanded it. It's pretty much just said, hey, here's the 15 Final Fantasies, make sense of the plot. And Squaresoft was like, well, we never intended to. And they came out with some shit and said, here's the plot. This is essentially what Nintendo did with Zelda. They did it. The difference is that with Kingdom Hearts, like, someone sat down and said, hey, this is what the plot's going to be. No one asked for it. Like, you had 1 and 2, and then you had a bunch of bullshit.
Well, yes. But that's kind of my point, is that if this game was... Like, these games were made with that in mind. But, like,
yeah,
this is going to be the plot, and it needs to be understood in this order. Why would you then go and make it so fucking confusing to actually play through them in what is considered the correct order? Like, I just don't... Like, that's actually something that almost makes me not even want to bother. Like, or I suppose I probably could just skip all the other bullshit and just play, like, the numbered ones and call it a day.
That's what I do with Metal Gear.
But, well, yeah. Well, I suppose that's what you could do with Final Fantasy also. And even skip some of the numbered ones, too. But.
Well, Final Fantasy, nothing connects at all. But the only thing that irritated me about Metal Gear is eventually you have to play Peace Walker in order to understand everything, because that thing actually did connect with everything. But there's like Metal Gear Acid that didn't connect with anything, and that was supposed to be a fun little card game.
Oh good,
you play with cards in that too. See, card games,
more card games.
Everyone loves card games.
Great.
Especially you would love a card game.
I mean, I do like card games,
but probably not in your video games.
I don't know. I mean, it depends. Like, apparently The Witcher 3 has, like, a very, like, large portion of the game that revolves around, like, in-game, like, collectible cards.
It's not a battle system, though. No. That's the battle system is playing cards.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's, like, a digital deck builder, basically.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know how I feel about that.
In fact, Crisis Core, Final Fantasy VII, was kind of card-oriented.
Fucking weird, man. Yeah, I don't know.
Another game that Square Enix announced that they were coming out with is actually kind of a surprise, because it wasn't really what you would classify as a success last generation with the Xbox 360 and PS3. But it has its fan base in Nier 2. Nier is actually one of those really interesting games that came out here that is completely different from its Japanese counterpart. Like, here in America, it's an older man trying to save his daughter. And then you have the same game in Japan, it's called Nier Replicant. And it's the same game, except they changed the main character from an older man trying to save his daughter to, an androgynous young male trying to save his sister.
Hmm.
They changed the main character to appeal more to their core audience, depending on the region. Which is one of the more interesting facts about that game. It's supposed to have an amazing soundtrack, pretty decent battle system, pretty overall decent game, and that's why the people are kind of interested that this game even got a sequel.
So, I confess that I really know nothing about Nier at all. So, I mean, is this just another sort of, like, JRPG, basically?
It's like an action RPG.
Okay. Hmm.
It's soundtrack. I've listened to its soundtrack. Amazing. An amazing soundtrack. Graphically, it's okay. When they announced the sequel to this game, and they kind of made a big deal out of it at the conference. And the conference they had, too, just kind of sucked. Because they talked about games. It was just talking about the games. They didn't really have any gameplay for anything, and every single time they showed gameplay for anything, it was talking over the gameplay. It was bad.
Oh, good.
And, but for them to announce Nier 2, like, I know that's the two things we took away from this, Kingdom Hearts 3 and Nier 2. For them to announce Nier 2 was kind of a surprise, because this game wasn't that big last gen. It was there.
Yeah, I mean, that's indicated by the fact that I really had no idea this thing was even a thing. Like, I remember vaguely hearing the name Nier at one point, but other than that, I had no idea what this was even about.
I was honestly hoping we'd hear more about Front Mission, because it sounded like they're coming out with a Front Mission game.
Mm.
And I like Front Mission. They fucked it up with Evolved. You know, Square Enix has so many properties they could be doing things with right now that they're not. It's starting to piss me off. They're worse than Nintendo.
I mean, at least they're not Konami. There's that. It's a low bar.
I don't even know what to say.
But still. You should take some solace in knowing that they could sink lower. There's always Konami.
Squaresoft doesn't want to sink lower, though. It just... I don't know anymore. I don't know when it comes to Square Enix.
There you go.
I'm not sure.
Our assessment of E3, we don't fucking know.
I don't fucking know.
Whatever, anymore. Man. It's like some games and shit.
Here's my wrap-up of E3. Here's what I think of E3. I've become so cynical and jaded of the video game industry that I can't look at anything as purely positive. Like, I look at Microsoft conference and be like, yeah, this was great, but why didn't you do it 2 fucking years ago? You know, what's this shit? How am I supposed to make this shit fun? And I look at Sony stuff and I'm like, yeah, but this is an exclusive, and this remake you're going to fuck up this remake somehow, some way. You're going to ruin it for me. And I don't understand why you're releasing this game, and why hasn't it come with the version 1 and 2 for Shenmue? And I look at Nintendo and it's like, why isn't there anything here I didn't know about already? I am so cynical and jaded and fucked up, I can't even take anything good away from this and just be happy for it. This is how fucking bad it is.
We're just going to change this to, like, the Bitter Old Man podcast, because apparently that's what it is. That We're just a couple of crusty old gamers that see the worst in literally everything.
I hate it. Like I
hate what, everything.
Like there's a silver lining to what's the opposite of silver lining? Like rotten lining to every positive now? It's just rot. I see rot. I see the potential for everything to just fall on its face and fucking suck. And I'm getting tired of it because, like, I don't even want to play anything anymore that's new. It's getting almost to that point where I have to, like, force myself to do it.
This is the same thing that happens with old people in music, where you just get to a point where you just start listening to anything that was, like, came out 30 years ago, and you completely become detached from whatever, like, the modern music is. That we are at that point.
This is the reason why, like, the Rolling Stones can still go on tour and pull a crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to get to the point soon where the fans are going to be having to come in, like, handicap buses in order to enjoy them. But
I mean, that's probably already happening now.
Probably is already happening if the band isn't themselves.
I mean, the Rolling Stones are, what, like, 90 or something?
No, they're in their 70s, 80s, 70s.
I don't know, man. All I know is that, like, Keith Richards is probably just going to outlive us all.
Yes. Yes, this will be my bitter old man speak. Excellent. Is where I'm going to be bitter old man. If I haven't been bitter already, I don't think I've been bitter enough.
If it hasn't been bitter yet, there's more.
There is more. People coming out and saying this is the best E3 of all time. Where the fuck have you been? Like, were you alive in the 90s? The best E3 of all time. Like, you weren't there when they were announcing, like, new things? Like, hey, there's a new system coming out. It's called the Nintendo 64 and the PlayStation and the Saturn. Like, you weren't there then? You weren't there, like, when the PlayStation 2 was announced? You weren't there when genres were being created? Like, this is the best E3 ever, because we announced a bunch of sequels and a remake.
See, that's funny, because I haven't heard that. I actually, from a couple different places, heard more or less the exact opposite, where it was just like, yeah, I don't know. It was, like, in E3. It was meh, whatever.
But I think they're saying it to... No, they're not saying it to be different. I think they resonate with me, but there was a lot of venues out there initially when this came out that were starting to call this the best E3 ever. A lot of the more mainstream venues were saying, like, this has been the most exciting E3 in years. I will give it that. That more came out of this E3 than E3s have come out in probably the past 3 years. Probably since Nintendo showed off the Wii U tech demo with Zelda. I don't know if this E3 was better than the one where Sony went out there and pretty much just completely destroyed Microsoft and left them in a heap of their own rubble.
Yeah, I would actually say that I think that one was better, honestly. But I mean, to say that this was like the best E3 in years or whatever, again, we're talking about low bars here. I mean, that's a pretty low bar, like, probably with the exception of that one where the new consoles were announced and Sony pretty much mopped the floor. I don't really think you've got a whole lot of competition as far as, like, entertaining E3s.
Like, well, even the, quote, best, unquote, conference was Sony, right? This year is what everyone's saying. Because, first of all, I mean, they had some really good games on there. But everyone didn't take away from the new games. Like Horizon Zero Dawn. I looked at that game and was like, wow, this is a game, this is a new IP you can take away from. And there might be some really good potential here, and that's really cool. And No Man's Sky, and that's really cool. But we're talking about Final Fantasy VII and Shenmue 3. Like, neither property has really proven itself within at least 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting a remake and then a sequel to a game that hasn't been seen in well over a decade, so...
Neither of which are exclusive either, for that matter.
No. So, I don't know. I mean, I give this E3 the official rating of meh.
I don't give it nah.
I give it a meh.
I give it a hmm.
That is like maybe slightly above a meh.
It's above a meh. It's not a wow. I mean, do I see some things that surprise me? I didn't think they'd do a Final Fantasy VII remake.
No, that's true.
I didn't think Shenmue 3 would ever come out. I didn't think The Last Guardian was ever canceled. I'm surprised they're kind of dragging that corpse as far as they can and trying to revive life into it at every opportunity. And that's where I am surprised. I'm surprised they're making as big of a deal out of it as they are, because nothing's come out of Team Ico since Shadow of the Colossus. And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know, man. For me, there really wasn't anything that came out of this E3 that was like, holy shit, I am really excited about this. At least for me. Like, the FF7 remake that everyone is shitting themselves over is, for me, it's kind of like, yeah, okay, great. That's good. Like, it'll look better, I guess.
It's almost gotten to the point where I'm looking at Nintendo's conference, as I was saying at the end of that, and it's like, yeah, I want this.
Sure.
I'm not excited.
Sure. I want them, and they will be good games.
Yeah.
I expect the same level of quality that I always do from Nintendo, and I'm sure that they will deliver, and I'm sure that they will be enjoyable experiences. But none of those things were, like, holy shit moments for me.
Yeah, none of them made me clean my chair.
No. Now, when the, like, gameplay and stuff like that from the actual Legend of Zelda, the next one,
you'll have to clean your chair.
Like, that is serious business. But so far, everything that's shown here, not just from Nintendo, but from just everybody, it was all just general, like, yeah, okay, no, this looks cool. Like, I will enjoy these things. That's great.
And Nintendo had a lot of gameplay footage, too. And like, as we experienced today, we played these games. They're not just a CGI trailer. And that's nice.
Yeah, I mean, and at least having that ability to have some hands-on time with them is definitely a plus. I'm still, at least for me, I'm still not entirely sold on Mario Maker. At least not at a $60 price
point. Not at $60, no.
But I did end up pre-ordering Triforce Heroes, so we'll see how that turns out. But I think that about wraps our E3 summary.
It does for this year. It does wrap it up. Thank you for joining us. If you have any Q&A for us, comments, if you want to tell me I suck, if you want to tell Shane he's awesome, then you can send that email.
That is totally fine with me.
podcast@retrohangover.com. Please tell me I suck, because if you don't want me to suck, you have to let me know what I'm sucking at. But I'll just continue to suck if you're not going to send anything that says I don't suck. Yeah, I'll just continue to be awful.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, please comment. We also have a Facebook page we'd love to see you at. On Facebook, we're Retro Hangover Podcast. So please visit us and give us your input, because we would love to hear from you.
And until next week, happy gaming.
Happy gaming.